The News Dissector with Danny Schechter. Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Danny Schechter. I'm your News Dissector. I'm back from visiting Iran, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I edit and produce the NewsDissector.com blog, but the blog has been, believe it or not, stolen from me, and I can't get access to it. I'm involved in a whole battle here, which I won't bore you with in terms of its details, but the blog is down for a while. You can visit me on MediaChannel1.org, MediaChannel1.org, PlunderTheCrimeOfOurTime.com. I do the program every week here as News Dissector Radio, attempting to kind of embellish and look into the issues, investigate the issues that I write about, and to talk with principals who are making news, who are involved in the news. Today, I'm hoping, if everything works, and I'm not clear that it will, to interview two of the people I met last week in Tehran, Iran. One is a professor, the other is a talk show host and a documentary filmmaker, and both of them will help us understand what's happening in Iran. The latest news, apparently, is that the government has shut down the internet in Iran. Apparently, a fear of demonstrations this weekend. Who knows if there was outside third-party covert intervention. We just don't know the details of that. We do need to understand this more closely, because Iran is a country which is being threatened on a regular basis by Israel and is having sanctions imposed on it by the United States, which is quite warlike in its impact to try to undermine their economy and to hurt their people as much as their government. And so all of this is an escalation of conflict, maybe part of some Obama campaign re-election strategy to create a sense of kind of war and an environment where he's going to get more support from people in the United States. Stand by your man, stand by your president in the light of potential conflict with another country. So we're having some problems reaching Iran. I'm not sure why, but we're going to keep trying. And in the meantime, I'm going to be here with you. We're opening up with a little song which you may have heard on this program. I don't think anyone else has played it, called Occupy This. Occupy This by Polarity One, about the Occupy movement. It's pretty dynamic. It's a good way to get going, and I'll try to find out what's happening with our efforts to reach Iran. Thank you. Stand by.
That are more unequal than the United States in the distribution of our wealth.
Bankers, corporations throw the country into the gutter like dice. Whatever comes up, they win. Politicians are paid off to keep the game running. There's just no way you're going to be competitive in a rigged game. Some of the best people we have will never get a shot.
Yeah.
Well, the song is Occupy This. It's by Polarity One, the musician that I work with on many of my films. We've played quite a bit of his music on this program every week, and we'll get back to the Occupy movement. Hopefully, Catherine will turn up a little bit later in the show and give us an update on what's been happening with Occupy in the week that I've been away. As I said, I went to Iran. I went to attend a conference on Hollywoodism, it was called, part of a film festival, a major film festival now in its 30th year that takes place every year. And this was a discussion of the power of Hollywood, the role of Hollywood, and also kind of a political attack on support for Zionism, support for Israel, which many people there think Hollywood is actively engaging in. I didn't, and I questioned that. But nevertheless, we had a 3 days of really somewhat intense, often divisive debate in Iran with many different points of view, not just points of view supporting the government of Iran. And now we're happy to be able to take you to Iran, because it's very rare when Americans get to actually talk to people in Iran, in a country which has just shut down the internet, believe it or not, because of fears of demonstrations this weekend. So we are now involved in an effort, a bridge, a radio bridge to the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we'd like to welcome as our guests two people who I recently spent some time with, who I was very impressed with, and who I felt could be very helpful to us. Fouad is a professor at the University of Tehran, and Nader is a talk show host, author, filmmaker, and as someone who's been around for a long time in Iran. So he can give us some background and some information perhaps we're not getting from the news. I think most of us know by now not to trust the mainstream news as a guide to what's really going on. It tends to reflect U.S. government policies. It tends to march in lockstep with the U.S. government, although from time to time there are reports that challenge the American paradigm or American allies. For example, most recently, U.S. officials have told NBC News that Israel worked with a terror group to kill Iran's nuclear scientists. So here's a country that's been denouncing terrorism forever, every single day, with intense propaganda, and is now admitting that it worked with terrorists to kill, murder, assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists. So all of these news stories are breaking. They're all happening right now, and they all are important for us to kind of explore. So let's start with you, Fouad. Please introduce yourself so our audience knows who you are with more detail. I, of course, don't have your bio here, so help me out. Give us a little information, and let's go, man. We're here.
Thank you for having me on your show, Danny. As you said, I'm an assistant professor at the Department of North American Studies at the University of Tehran. My PhD is in mass communication, but when I came back to Iran a couple of years ago, since I'd lived in the U.S. for many years, the university people asked me to go to the North American Studies Department. And as I mentioned to you privately, we love your documentaries here. You are doing an excellent work. I hope you keep on the good work. And I was just on your site on Progressive Radio. The internet is working just fine here.
Okay. All right. Stop. Stop right there for 1 second. Here, I came in this morning. I was told CBS or all the American networks, CNN, are reporting that the internet is not working in Iran. We're speaking to somebody in Iran who's using the internet as we speak. So clearly, we're not getting even factual information about what's happening. Continue,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, that's the mainstream media that you just talked about. Sometimes they give you inaccurate information when the information deals with a country that U.S. has a problem with the government of that country, in this case, Iran. So whenever you hear something about Iran, check it with another source. That would be a good idea.
Nader is with us as well. Nader, would you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit more about your own work so that the audience here in New York and online and throughout the world can get to know you a little better.
Hi, Danny. I hope everything is well with you. I am Nader Talibzadeh. I'm a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, and a presenter on a television weekly show in Tehran. And I was just listening to Dr. Izzetti speaking with you. You're right. The internet is connected. I was right on antiwar.com reading all kinds of articles. So, you can't trust three decades of demonization, you know, very consistent about Iran, all kinds of mainstream news that is really foiled at best.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of very important because here we have misinformation leading to deception, leading to propaganda, leading to false understandings, leading inevitably to armed conflict and war. I documented this in Iraq. I did a film called WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception, that showed how the news media in our country was actually promoting the war in Iraq, not simply reporting on it. And it seems like it's happening again, and here we are trying desperately to try to find out what the truth is, and it's so difficult to do, as witness this current rumor that I reported in good faith just 10 minutes ago, you know, that the internet has been shut down in Iran, and it turns out, according to the two people we have on the line from Iran, that it is not. So that's a good corrective, in a sense, to misinformation. But let me, you know, ask you how you assess Iranian-American relations and the dangers of war from your vantage point in Tehran, you know, where you're living with this every day. Both of you, comment, you know, yeah. Please.
Yeah, basically there is no relationship. I mean, even if we attempted to have a relationship, even if we attempted to have media connection, there's no desire from the U.S. side to sit down and talk. There's plenty of threat. All kinds of options are on the table for the longest time, and there's no true desire to sit down and have a logical discussion. I mean, the same patterns of things are repeated. So, we do look forward to speaking, exchanging views, solving problems, but it can't be one-sided. I'll give you an example for your audience. For the longest time, we've attempted to be able to interview an American congressman, an American senator, somebody from the White House, maybe the president. We have news people in Washington from our Press TV and Al Alam, which is our Arabic station. And we have never been allowed access to speak to these people, and I think it's an arrogant stance. On the other side, Dr. Ahmadinejad has spoken with all the American media all the time. They're here in Iran. When he goes to New York, he talks with them. So this is a clear example, a very lucid example of the policy there, the government policy of don't talk, don't discuss, don't sit down, no diplomacy. These guys don't understand anything. They're not for peace. They're for threat. They're for eradication. So this is one very clear example of differences in policies, and the day that one of our media people can sit down, for example, myself, I would have loved to be able to speak or interview somebody from the U.S. government, and let's talk about the issues you're talking about in your mainstream news. Why don't they come up and talk? I mean, why do they not do that? I mean, this is consistent and it's harmonious. It's like orchestrated boycott.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, as a journalist, you know, I was warned, don't go to Iran. It's too dangerous. You know, you're going to be, you know, imprisoned. You're going to be terrorized or whatever. And I did go. And I did find it extremely informative. I was on Nader's program, and I found his questions very enlightened and very interesting. And he's extremely well informed about what's going on. So, you know, we have this disconnect between what we're being told and what is really happening. Now, Nader, on your part, right now, what is your assessment? Because, you know, the Obama administration says it is against Israel attacking Iran. It is for diplomacy. It calls what it's doing diplomacy. That is, to extreme and heavy sanctions on Iran, attempts to disrupt your economy and the like. All of this is basically explained to the American people as a form of diplomacy. How do you see it?
It's that's very hypocritical, because this is actually an act of war. When you sanction the central bank of any country, where the livelihood of those people depends on, where everything depends on the central bank, sales of oil, it depends on the central bank, you sanction that along with other sanctions that you've been doing for the past 30 years. Where is there room for diplomacy? And this along with other threats, is what's looming, and especially in the past year, it's intensified. America, I think, is under pressure, extreme pressure from within. Just look at the votes in Congress and the Senate when it comes to Iran. It's like 99% against 1%. So it's something. There are very strong pressure groups in the U.S. that also, I think, have the media, which create this huge gap, and then the Iranian people actually are suffering. It is there is difficulties with this sort of sanctioning, and they only resort when we talk about the diplomacy. They only resort to threats.
You know, what's interesting about this, Nader, is that on the flight back, I was reading in the International Herald Tribune an article really reporting on what diplomacy by America that's led to breakthroughs has meant in the past. And there was a long article reminding me and all the readers of Richard Nixon's trip to China. Now, I am probably one of the least, Nixon is one of the people I admire the least. But when he went to China, one of the things that he did to try to break through there was recognize China, which had not been recognized by the United States, just as Iran is not recognized by the United States. Reopen diplomatic relations, have some sort of dialogue and interaction with Chinese officials. So this has been done in the past with people who were considered even more dangerous enemies than Iran is today. But the Obama people are not even doing what Nixon did in China. They're using the term diplomacy to mask, it seems to me, an act of war. Now, Fouad, what you teach students at the University of Tehran, what is their sense of what's happening here?
I think students are more or less questioning this type of attitude towards Iran, because, as you said, in the past, the U.S. has been able to talk to and conduct diplomacy with countries like China, countries like Soviet Union during the Cold War. And that has been going on for some time. With regard to Iran, it's somewhat different. The U.S. government, since the beginning of the revolution that happened here 33 years ago, has been trying to overthrow the government that came to power after the Shah's government fell. The Shah's government was obviously a very close ally of the United States. It was a corrupt government. He had people in prison, was torturing people. And the Savak, the Shah's secret police, was actually created by the CIA, the same people who orchestrated the 1953 coup in Iran. And basically, U.S. and the Shah's government were helping each other in terms of making sure that Iran stays within the U.S. domain. Tomorrow is actually the 33rd anniversary of the revolution that overthrew the Shah. The revolution, for the younger people in your audience, it was very much similar to what's happening in the Arab world now, in Egypt, in Tunisia, where people are rising up against corrupt governments.
Sort of an awakening movement.
It was. Many people believe that this awakening that we witness in the Middle East is actually the result of what happened in Iran.
Do you know, Fouad, I'll tell you that at Occupy Wall Street, you know, I've done a book now called Occupy, Dissecting Occupy Wall Street. I was writing for Al Jazeera. I was writing for many websites reporting on what was going on with Occupy Wall Street. And one of the things I found one day when I was talking to a whole group of people there about what inspired Occupy Wall Street was a few activists, occupiers, said, you know, it was Iran that was first. Iran, the students in Iran, the activists in Iran, were occupying squares, were occupying, you know, a space of the Shah's government, were challenging it, and that this very much influenced them 33 years later. So it's really interesting how that part of the inspiration has not been mentioned, as far as I can tell, in any mainstream media outlet, but I had a direct conversation with people about it.
What should happen, and your question was on U.S.-Iran relations, what should happen is exactly what happened with China. U.S. government should realize that they should not basically overthrow a foreign government when they don't like it, and they should negotiate their differences. And this is what the Nixon administration did with China. Now we have the Obama administration that came in talking about change, but when President Obama got into office, he chose people in his administration that were very much against rapprochement with Iran, and they're very, very much in line with Israeli policies, people like Dennis Ross and others. And that resulted in disappointment in Tehran, because given Obama's background, given the message that he had, a lot of people in Iran thought that he would actually deliver change. But in reality, he basically continued the Bush policies with regard to Iran, and he has continued on that path. So we don't see any change coming from that sign.
Well, you know, when I was there, I had the opportunity to have a short interview with your president. Okay, and I asked him that question. I actually started off by saying to him, should I be scared of you? Should I be frightened of you? And he looked at me. He said, do I look scary? He said back, you know. And so then I said to him, well, are you going to drop a nuclear bomb on my head, you know, to the president of Iran? He started laughing. He said, well, we're not making nuclear bombs, you know, basically repeating what Iran has been saying publicly, although many people in this country don't trust it, don't believe it, but don't have any evidence to really challenge it. And then I asked him, are you willing to talk to Washington? And he said, absolutely, but Washington is unwilling to talk to us. So, that, you know, that suggests to me that there is no communication, that it's not Iran's fault, that Iran is willing to communicate with the United States, but the United States only wants to communicate on its terms and on its issues.
He actually wrote a letter to President Obama two times. One, when he first became president, he sent a message of congratulations, and then a second one basically pointing out some of the difficulties that exist, and he got zero responses. There was no reply to his letter.
So, I mean, this is a part of the story, of course, that we're not getting here. Nader, what is it, do you think, about, you've lived also in the United States, what is it about U.S. attitudes towards Iran? Why is the United States so hostile to Iran? Is it because Iran is hostile to the United States? Is it simply tit for tat? Or is there something deeper here?
You know, this is something that's been going on. I was here 2 months. I came back from New York to Iran about 2 months before the revolution, and I watched things close up. In fact, when I came, I helped out with CBS News when they were covering the revolution before the revolution, and which was pretty positive. And then as soon as the day of the revolution was passed, it became with a slope, it became, you know, it became deadly antagonistic. It was a very weird thing. I witnessed many different things at CBS that you could write a pretty good essay about. Anyhow, the demonization of Iran began after the revolution, and it's been said. Yeah, the reason why? Well, I think, you know, Iran has been portrayed as an aggressor to peace in the world. Somebody has decided that Iran is an aggressor, a threat to world peace. Well, check out the history. About a year after the revolution, we had 18 armies invade the west of Iran. Saddam Hussein, who came out of the blues, suddenly invaded Iran, supported by Soviet tanks and American intelligence, satellite intelligence. This is the first time during the Cold War that the two superpowers were coordinately working together against another enemy. So we did not attack Saddam. Saddam attacked us. 2 weeks before Saddam's attacking us, you had a couple of high-level American statesmen. I think Rumsfeld was seen with Saddam in Jordan just 2 weeks. And then the war began. And then it continued on for 8 years. Nobody gave us anything in terms of weaponry. We could not get anything except from the black market or from North Korea. Feeble weapons compared to what the Mirage and the Soho and the Topolov and the MiGs and the T-72 Russian tanks, etc. So we experienced 8 years of war, which I think was pretty much not seen in the American media. They chose not to show it. Well, then after the war, Saddam attacks Kuwait. He goes into a frenzy, and then he turns into a monster. So all throughout this history, Iran has not aggressed, has not threatened, except it has an ideology. I think it's threatening because it has an ideology. And this is, I think, the root problem that is that no one talks about. Iran inspired Hezbollah, which drove Israel back from Lebanon after 18 years of occupying Lebanon. Iran inspired these people. They drove them back, and then Hamas was born. Democratically born, and they were boycotted pretty much.
Yeah, so, let's just remember, Hamas did win the election in Gaza. Yeah. It didn't just come to power by force of arms. There was actually a process there, and many people voted for Hamas, would say not just for ideological reasons, but because they found the competition, the Fatah, whatever, as totally corrupted, okay? So they felt that Hamas would have their interests at heart more, and they voted for them on the basis of social services that they had been supplying, as did Hezbollah in Beirut, you know, supplying social services that the government was not supplying. So there's always more to these stories than we learn, but we tend to reduce everything, and as if nobody in the world has any separate identity from some big power manipulating them. You know, it's like we say Hamas in America, we say Iran. Iran is behind Hamas. You know, Hamas is a terrorist group, according to Israel. Now we just get this report that Israel has teamed with a terror group to kill Iran's nuclear scientists. So, you know, it seems as if there's a lot of selective morality being applied here.
Exactly. I think this is a high time or nine time for Americans who want to think independently to check out the news, to really check them out. I think it's clear to many people what's going on, except that those people never get a chance at the mainstream media. They're never seen, they're never interviewed, and you get blasted with the same message. Iran is the axis of evil. Iran is a threat to world peace. And this sort of mantra is very effectively repeated. So now when you come to the point of, you know, a war, which is very serious now, then people are gasping or just reaching out for what is the truth. And I appreciate, Danny, what you're doing. And I hope we can reciprocate what you're doing in our show, that we would be able to interview American people, American media experts, analysts, authors, all those people that don't have a chance, are not given a chance to speak in mainstream media.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you my experience with Press TV, which is Iran's English language, overseas network, the way the BBC World Service is, a Voice of America is, or what have you. But it's a news organization, and it's, in my experience, has more diverse perspectives and is more open and to debate and discourse than the American networks. I mean, I worked at ABC News, people. I worked at CNN. I worked at CNBC. I was on the inside. Not many of the people who are critical of American news actually worked in American news. So when I talk about it, it's based on experience, not just on some sort of ideological, you know, reflex action, you know, denouncing them. I find, you know, good journalists in America as well as, you know, hacks and flacks. But I also find at Press TV, you know, they've had me on quite a bit. I was just on the other night where I, you know, had a debate with the host about the whole Holocaust issue. He was speaking of the Jews. And I said, please don't speak of the Jews. Speak, if you will, of Israel or of Zionists who you believe support Israel. But don't throw everybody in one pod here. I challenged him. And at the end, he agreed. He said, I'm sorry for my choice of language. I didn't mean to offend you. I said, look, I wasn't being offended. It's just that this type of sloppy language ends up reinforcing stereotypes. And these stereotypes are often very negative and often don't really inform people. And this happened live on Press TV. And they carried the program, sent it out, you know, on the Internet. So it's, you know, it's not what you quite think it is or you would think it is if you just relied on American news, which is often very self-righteous. And, you know, we are fair, we are balanced, when in fact we are not fair and we are not balanced. And hence, you know, newsdissector.com and my many books have tried to show all this. Fawad, just one point here. When I was in Iran, I want you guys to stay on. We're going to have to take a little break and then we'll keep going. I know you have to leave earlier, Nader, so we'll keep going till you have to leave. But, Fawad, one of the things I found among people in Iran, they say, look, America, Israel will not attack us because we are too strong. Is that being naive?
The feeling here among a lot of people is that Israeli government is increasing its rhetoric against Iran and is talking about the issue of war and attacking Iran, and not because it actually wants to attack Iran. The real reason some people feel is because they want to increase these economic pressures and sanctions, and they want to present this threat of war so the Europeans and other countries would increase economic pressure to please Israel not to attack. So that's an analysis that...
Yeah. And at the same time, Ford, I don't know if you know this, I saw a tiny little item about this, that there's been a general strike in Israel. This is the third day of a massive general strike against the Israeli government by the Israeli people because of their economic policies. There have been sit-ins. There's been a virtual Occupy movement there, although the word Occupy in Israel has a different meaning, you know, because of the occupation of the Palestinians. Yeah. You were saying?
Yes. So my own thinking is that whenever Israelis threaten to attack a country, you have to be quite concerned because in the history they have attacked their neighbors repeatedly and they are fully capable of attacking again some other countries. So you have to be very careful when they talk about these issues because in their foreign policy, attacking is actually very much deep-rooted. Overall, Iran is obviously more capable of defending itself than some other countries in this region, like Afghanistan or Iraq or other countries that have been attacked. So there is this sense of pride among Iranians that we can defend ourselves, but at the same time, a lot of people are concerned because they realize that if Israel attacks Iran, U.S. will be part of the war and U.S. will be supporting Israel. And they realize that the U.S. government is spending billions of dollars on its military and the military is strong. So they don't want to come to a situation where they have to face off U.S. Overall, I think the shows like yours that is sort of bringing the other side of the news or dissecting the news, this will help American people realize that things that are said about Iran in the mainstream media may not be accurate. So I think shows like yours will help.
Well, let's hope so. Obviously, there's so much more that we can discuss. We are going to keep going here. This is a rare direct encounter between the United States and Iran on radio, on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN FM. We will have a podcast of this show that you'll be able to get off the website, the PRN.FM website, and share with your friends. So it's a very unique opportunity to hear from people who are actually in Iran right now, who are dealing with this situation, trying to understand it, and share their feelings with us. And we're trying to do the same on this side. We don't want to pull any punches. There are a lot of criticisms that many people here have that I think are legitimate of the Iranian government. There certainly is a lot of controversy. There are many people in Iran who oppose the president, who oppose the policies there. On the other hand, if you want to unify the Iranian people against the United States, attack Iran. That'll do it, okay? That will do it in a way that, you know, with consequences I think that many of us are not really aware of. You'll remember Jimmy Carter's hostage rescue effort, which crashed and burned in Iran. You'll remember 400-plus days of hostage taking at the American embassy. I mean, Iranians are fighters, and they're fighting, and many of them are questioning and challenging human rights abuses and questioning their own government. But if you want to unite all of those people against the United States, attack Iran. We'll be back in a second with more here on News Dissector Radio. I'm Dissector at MediaChannel.org if you want to reach me. Stay with us now for more.
Show I'm on, I can't sleep right, my head's tight. Gotta buy food, clothes, books, and it looks like there's holes in my shoes. What to do? My credit card's full, and it's due. No job, no time, no reason, no rhyme.
Hey, Danny Schechter, your News Dissector here on News Dissector Radio on PRN FM, heard every week at this time, 1 to 2 on Fridays, but you can hear it all the time on our podcasts, which are available on the PRN.FM website. So we are trying to offer news and analysis of a kind that you don't necessarily hear elsewhere. We're trying to talk with people in the know in various places, and we're really happy. Aaron Crown, who edits MLImplode.com, which is a great website on the economy. He's been tracking it closely in detail for years now. He's been on with us on the radio. He's called in. This is his first actual visit to the studio, and he'll be joining us in a few minutes. But let's go back to Iran. Nader, I know you have to leave. Give us some perspective. How can Americans help in this crisis? Americans who are unhappy with what's happening, who see, you know, the drift to war here, who see all the propaganda in the media. What can they do? What can we do?
Well, you know, you're asking a very good question. Something to really work hard on, I think, because time is critical. And well, you know, in my show, which was shown about three nights ago, and you had 60 minutes to talk on the show with about 5 to 7 million people watching. You mentioned at the end we have to be creative in how we're going to conduct public diplomacy between the two people. And this is a time to really be creative. You have your radio show, we have our TV show. Dr. Izadi is a professor at the university. He's on many different Iranian shows, you know, dispensing a lot of information. He's lived in the States. He's been a professor at the University of Louisiana until recently. So we have to figure out ways to make people contact each other on a wide scale, because there are not too many of people in the media who can do that at this point. But from what I know in the streets, the Iranian people would really like to be able to speak not only to the American people, but to the people who are responsible, the administrators. And this, I think, very this evil administered gap that has been conducted to reach an end. I know they're trying to reach an end, which one, unfortunately one of them is war, to gain something which they will not be gained. It's just will be torture and destruction. Anyhow, we have to be creative. We have to figure out ways. If you conduct such a show on a regular basis every week, you know, we can find you all kinds of people who can not only speak English, but they're in important government positions, and have the American people ask these people questions. Have them ask these people who are in the parliament, in other positions, and through your radio program to be able to broadcast what is on their mind. So I think media will carry huge leverage.
Well, that's one thing. The other thing, Fouad, I think we can have more exchanges between students. You know, we have Skype now where people actually can communicate with each other and see each other while doing it. And it might be a good idea to have students in Tehran, students in America, have exchanges, have discussions, have dialogues about issues. You know, we don't necessarily have to agree with each other on everything to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. At our college, we have the facilities to do this. Occasionally we get American professors to conduct short courses for our students. So this is very much a doable project. I think when the people from both sides talk to each other, they realize that these are just human beings with similar needs, similar fears, and this dialogue will create an atmosphere of peace, more or less.
You know,
and
I think
the last thing the Middle East needs is another war. So I think through your show and through other projects that can be...
I wish this show was heard by more people. You know, this is a small, alternative, independent network, although it's getting a lot of attention and has quite a few listeners. And I have to tell you that the feedback has been very strong and positive about what we're trying to do. So it's something that I think is interesting. I'd love to go on Press TV with a talk show where we can get more Americans on talking to people in Iran. I think that that's missing right now. And this approach would be very helpful. I don't know how to pursue that, but you know, I'm a little disturbed because one of the problems here is that we have a lot of propaganda and counter-propaganda, denunciation, sloganizing, the Zionist this, the imperialist that, the you know the Islamic you know terrorist this and that, you know, and all of this propaganda. I mean, every day there's more of it. Iran is supporting Al Qaeda, you know, et cetera, and so forth. And so it's very hard for Americans to know anything about Iran, to have any appreciation of what's happening. There's also propaganda coming out of Los Angeles, a channel called Farsi One, supported by Rupert Murdoch, which is trying to target people in Iran with sitcoms and reality shows and all the rest of it. A soft approach to try to, you know, kind of win people away from their own government and their own culture. So this is a war going on right now. It's a war of information. It's a cultural war, and it's a war that, you know, is really not in anyone's interests. And that's why I think we need to do this more. And, gentlemen, I have to tell you, I really appreciate your taking the time to join us here today. If you go to this website, you'll be able to get download the podcast, which you could share on your websites or with other friends. Just know that I am trying as best as I can. It's just one news dissector to try to, you know, facilitate this type of exchange and this type of analysis. You know, I went to Iran and have found people there extremely hospitable, very, very welcoming, and very open-minded, much more than I would have been if I had been in that situation faced with daily threats and daily pressures. I don't know if I would be as open as the people of Iran seem to be. That doesn't mean there aren't real issues that we need to debate and discuss. The nuclear issue is one of them, certainly, but there are more than that. And, you know, we never get time to discuss it because all of the headlines, all the hostility blocks discussion. And that's why, you know, I'd just like to, you know, once again invite you guys to If people want to write to you, why don't we put it this way? Write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org, and I will forward your letters and comments to our guests in Iran. You know, when you get complicated addresses and all the rest of it, people can't follow it. So I'll be happy to do that. I'd like to have you back on the program when we can talk some more about these developments. And I really appreciate the opportunity to meet you and to chat with you. And thank you again for joining us here in Progressive Radio Network, because that's what we're trying to do, offer sort of the news that's not in the news. You know, news media censorship is also often not about what's covered, but what's not covered. You know, what's left out, what's omitted. Omission is almost as important as commission. So that's what I'm trying to do. I know I'm talking a little too much here, gentlemen. Thanks again. If you have a final comment, please share it with us now.
Thank you. Thank you, Danny. I appreciate it, and I look forward to continuing this media contact with you.
Floyd?
And I'd like to also thank you, and if you need anything from Iran in terms of information or books, or you want to arrange dialogues, Danny's idea was an excellent idea. I think you can write to him, and we can certainly arrange that. So long to New York. Yes, thank you.
And I would love to, you know, give a lecture, if possible, in your university over Skype and talk a little bit about my experiences in the American media, because I've been on the outside, I've been on the inside. I guess I'm on the outside again, but I'm still plugging away. And one of the issues we're very concerned about here and have been is the financial crisis, the depression that we seem to be, you know, living in right now. With also distorted information, and this is what our next guest is here to talk about, Aaron Crown, editor of ml-implode.com, a website that should be on your list of favorites, because it offers all sorts of perspectives about what's happening in the economy. And I'd like to start, Aaron, as we our guests leave us in Iran, talk about what's like in the news now, this big deal with U.S. banks about mortgages. Is this going to solve the problem? Tell us what it is and what the problems with it are.
So I guess we're switching from foreign policy propaganda to domestic propaganda, which basically wraps up how I see a lot of what's been going on with this. This settlement, and I'm struggling a little bit to catch up since I've been traveling, but from what I can gather, it's not much of a surprise. They've telegraphed most of what they were going to do. So, you know, a lot of the commentary we've been running has basically been in the vein that this is basically to indemnify the banks as much as possible against particularly robo-signing and the possibility of having to face 50 separate actions from the states, if not more. Amounting to, you know, could be hundreds of billions of dollars in liabilities. So they, the banks want to get that capped, absolutely. And, you know, an outcome of this is they have gotten that liability originating from the state attorney general's capped now.
Which means, to translate it into News Dissector ease, that they cannot be jailed or sued or held accountable for what they did. They're settling.
The way I saw it was it's basically you have a reckless driver who is settled for a parking ticket.
That's a really good way of putting it. I mean, and you know what's interesting, this is the Obama initiative after failing basically to deal with this whole housing crisis. All these various programs that were enunciated, HAMP, et cetera, and so forth, only reaching a handful, almost literally a handful of people because the eligibility criteria was so high or distorted. You now have the government saying, okay, let's give these people something. Let's give them some money. Let's give them some of the bank's money without saying let's give them some of the bank's money that we gave to the banks earlier. So, you know, everybody is happy, so to speak. And, you know, there were a couple of standouts. Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general of New York State, was refusing to go along with this so-called global settlement that the government was pushing. And so he seemed to have been co-opted rather nicely with an appearance at the State of the Union address, although he wasn't even introduced there. I mean, he was sort of allowed to be sitting near Michelle Obama, but not really identified. And then later, given a position as a, as one of the people administering all of this in terms of this new fraud task force. But it seems to me more of an exercise in co-optation politically, giving him some political chips and picturing him as part of a big national story if he only basically plays ball with us and backs down on his demands. Do you think I'm onto something here?
Well, I pretty much agree with that. I suppose we could be accused of that being the cynical take, but, my perspective is, hey, prove me wrong, guys. You know, Schneiderman, he's still talking about, he's going to really be holding this task force accountable, and, we'll see. The proof will be in the pudding. But I think what we're going to have to look to for real restructuring and reform and recompense for this mess are things like the effort that Martin Adelman is pushing that I don't know if you saw just coming out of the Arizona state legislature. They had this bill passed through committee to do an eminent domain-based restructuring of these mortgage securities to force the principal reductions for these distressed homeowners. And apparently, I don't think it's passed the legislature yet, but it passed unanimously out of committee. And there is similar legislation now that is being pushed by activists in other states.
Right. If you want to follow this foreclosure crisis, because it's really at the heart of the whole financial crisis. In other words, my whole belief is that fraud and crime is really what's at the heart of it all and has been covered up and sort of not really reported in any detail. I've written this book, The Crime of Our Time, about financial fraud. I made the film Plunder, The Crime of Our Time. But, it's hard to get these distributed and get these out because we keep running up against, quote, reform as a term. We're actually fixing the problem. Don't keep escalating your attacks. Let's play ball. Let's find a compromise. Let's get, these people some practical goodies. But the bottom line of it is that this is the biggest kind of manipulation of perception and public opinion that we've seen in a long time. And there are three sources that I would recommend to you, our listeners. First of all, mlimplode-implode.com. This website has a tremendous range of views and perspectives, including perspectives from inside the industry, not just, kind of Noam Chomsky-type perspectives or but people who are actually involved. So, and one of their bloggers, one of the people that they've been promoting and I've been very impressed with is this guy, Martin Adelman, who writes under the name of Mandelman. And on the ML Implode, you can, Google this. His articles have the distinction of being really well written and interesting, as well as very well thought through. And so that's a second. And the other website I like is nakedcapitalism.com, which has really been holding all of these people's feet to the fire and showing all the contradictions here between the claims of reform and the reality of basically victories for the banks who are basically doing what they always do, buying people off in various ways. And that's what seems to be happening. So those are three sources you'll find interesting. I think this whole restructuring thing. I think there are some people who will get some money and some help, but it will only touch really a relative handful of the people who should be helped in this situation.
I believe it's been said that the settlement could grow to maybe $40 billion as other banks join, but we're talking about a $700 billion to $1 trillion problem. So keep that in mind for perspective.
And, of course, the U.S. government put in the $700 billion in the first bailout, in the economy, and then the Fed secretly and covertly put in like $17 trillion. So the banks have been, sucking off of all this federal money while many of their CEOs are denouncing the government. Talk about chutzpah, a term that we use here on the left side of Manhattan, basically attacking the government and taking money from the government at the same time. And this is something that really needs more analysis. Now, just to go from this specific to a more general point, one of your favorite people, Ben Bernanke, was in the news recently, and he was you know, saying that, you know, everything is getting better and that he sees a breakthrough in the economy. How should we regard this? I mean, we've heard it before so many times.
Well, yeah, I think he's putting out something there for everyone, I guess, because some of the recent comments of his I saw were that the Fed was basically saying that, you know, they can't keep employment boosted. They can't address employment and address inflation at the same time, which, you know, acknowledges pretty much a reality of what they do. So I saw very tempered comments from Bernanke recently. Expectations management, I guess that was more geared at Congress. But as far as the overall macroeconomic statistics, I think you know that I have a very dim view of them. I would direct people to, I believe it was Paul Craig Roberts' latest article. He was assistant Treasury Secretary under Reagan, and he's become very much an establishment critic. And he basically points out that the stats are bogus, and he had some nice charts in his last article that I endorse. That you know, we're still pretty much in a depression, and there are little improvements and recoveries, but you know, the grand problems have not been solved. And for my part, I think the Fed is pretty helpless to do much.
It's interesting also how the Republicans are slamming on Bernanke's head about, you know, keeping inflation under control, which of course helps people with money, you know, preserving the value of that money and not really caring about the people who are not working or out of work, like Mitt Romney said about the poor. You know,
they have a very good antenna for what they believe they should be saying.
Well, you know, we're introducing some of these subjects hopefully as a way to encourage you to find out more for yourself, to read more, to go to ml-implode.com and the other sites we've mentioned. Read Mr. Martin Andelman as Mandelman on their site, and nakedcapitalism.com, and inform yourself about all of this stuff, because you know it's coming to get you, brother. It's you know, right there, and it's going to affect all of us as the economy sinks. Europe seems to be unable to extricate itself. The Greeks are now paying off more bankers and killing themselves in the process. It looks like a you know, not a disaster waiting to happen, a disaster that is happening in front of our eyes, with so few commentators and so few analysts really appreciating the human costs of all of this. Forget about all statistics and all this ideological mush. Let's get into the reality of how this affects people. Okay, that's it for me. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. You've been listening to News Dissector Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.com, PRN.com. You can write to me at dissector at media. I'm sorry, PRN.FM, sorry. You can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. I'd love to hear from you. Unfortunately, my blog is down. I hope to have a new blog up soon as newsdissector.net. We'll brief you on that when we can and when it happens. But in the meantime, thanks for being here. Stay with us for more next week at the same time, same station.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold when Wall Street stepped into the fold. Congress paid off, workers laid off. Stanford, AIG, and Madoff.
Credit swaps, credit stocks, empty wallets, and empty